The devil is in the details,
isn't he?
God is way more in the details. And God bless the people who made the translation of the scriptures that we read at Sunday Mass. It is not a small feat to translate the entire Bible. And in the course of translating the entire Bible, it is possible that you could miss one or two things. Today is one of those days where they missed something. So the scriptures that we just read, we heard about this rich man, Lazarus, who's always near him at his gate, begging. And it says, dogs even used to come and lick his sores. It sounds awful, right? That's not what it says in Greek. They switched the word order in the translation. It says something different. It says, even dogs used to come. Not dogs even used to come and do this. Gross. It says, even dogs used to do this. Which is to say, this rich man so forsook his natural and moral responsibilities to the person right next to him that it took an animal to figure out what he was supposed to do. And it turns out that while I don't think you would want everything that's in a dog's saliva, there's something called histatins or histatins that are cleansing and antibacterial. Somebody's nodding their head, so the internet didn't make this up. In dog saliva that's healing, and in the ancient world, you could actually sometimes go to places where they would have like kennels full of dogs, and you could pay to have dogs lick your sores, because it was actually cleansing and healing. So that one little difference makes a big difference. It's a reminder to us that that moment in the gospel that seems so grotesque is actually a moment of grace. And that it's not different with our lives. The things about ourselves or in our world that can seem grotesque aren't at their root or don't have to be grotesque, but can be an opportunity or a moment through which God's grace can work. I'm just going to turn this off. That's not sweet. There we go. So, other things about this gospel. This gospel does a lot to challenge both our thinking and our behavior about two things, about the poor and about hell. So this poor man, Lazarus, who's named, sits by this rich man's door for this whole rich man's life. This rich man and his five siblings party it up and do nothing to care for Lazarus. They both die. And the gospel says that the Lazarus is carried by angels to the bosom of Abraham, to this place of comfort and consolation. And the rich man is brought to, quote, torment in flames, unquote. It would be convenient or easier or maybe more comforting for us to think that there is no such thing as hell and that if it existed, it were empty. That's not what this says. It says, this guy had somebody poor near him, maybe even knew his name, next to him his whole life, did nothing, and he went to hell for it. It didn't say the rich man failed to solve systemic issues of injustice. It didn't say the rich man committed genocide. It just says there was one guy, just this one guy. He only had to do that, take care of this one guy next to him, and he didn't do that. And that separation throughout his life that he solidified over and over again by ignoring this guy solidified in eternity. Our relationships now are not just relationships now. The relationships we have now are eternal. And our actions or our inaction now with respect to the people we're given to care for have eternal consequences. One of my professors in college, who is this very wonderful, amazing, intelligent theology professor, apparently once a year he used to get out of his parish, and his homily was, if you don't serve the poor, you're going to hell. And then he would just sit down. have real responsibilities to the poor. It's a beautiful thing about the food pantry that's so active that we have here in Grafton. It's a beautiful gift. It's also a reminder to us that secular power, power that has itself or its own preservation as its reference and its focal point, will always fail us. So Lazarus had this man near him who had so much wealth and influence and who really could have done something with it. His eternal salvation hinged on what he did with that. But that rich man didn't pull through for Lazarus and failed him. We might just think of an example. Say, for instance, that there is, instead of serving the poor this week, you could watch 12 hours of live impeachment inquiry coverage. Hypothetically. Now, nobody would think, and yet so many people do think, that Nancy Pelosi would like to launch an impeachment inquiry because, simply, she is a saintly and impartial arbiter of justice. Nobody would think, and yet so many people do think, that the president, Donald Trump, would suggest to the new leader of Ukraine that he start a new potential investigation into people because he's simply a saintly and impartial arbiter of justice. The fact is that it's really tempting in the world, no matter, regardless, your political party. Power, Edmund Burke said, corrupts absolute power, corrupts absolutely, and our tendency when we receive power is to hold onto it. Nobody's exempt from that. And the fact that people do that should make us uncomfortable, but it's not a political condemnation. It's a recognition of reality. But that's just a natural temptation when people have power to use it to preserve their own life or their own status. It should be a reminder to us, this gospel, that that power is not where our identity ultimately lies. And that power can, for so many of us, bring only lies. Our identity belongs in Jesus Christ, who loves us, who created this world before there were political parties, even. Imagine that. And that his power, the second reading calls him the blessed and only ruler. His power and his authority are for service. And that whatever power or authority or position we might have in our life, if it's big, enormous, or small, is to be given over to God, not for our own self-preservation, not for the preservation of what we like, but to serve. And that's hard. It should make us uncomfortable. We should be a little upset when we hear that, because it goes so contrary to everything we're used to seeing and the way we're used to doing things. This gospel should leave us with two takeaways. One, that we are called to serve. Who, we should ask ourselves, is in my life like Lazarus? Somebody I might pass every day, even somebody whose name I might know, but who it's so uncomfortable to get involved with because you don't know, if I give this person food once, what's going to happen after that? Maybe that's what that rich man felt and thought. Is there somebody like that in our life? And the other takeaway is that we're also called to be like Lazarus. It can be easy to think, our job is to serve, and so we will always serve. We never need help. But that's not the truth. Lazarus knew how to confess his own need. Lazarus knew how to confess that he could not save himself. And we need that too. It's tempting to think that we can save ourselves, or that we are always right, that we need no help. That's just not the state of things. And there is a Messiah, one who comes to save us, one who comes to care for our sores, who with his body and blood, his flesh and blood, his flesh on our flesh, in our bodies, wants to heal and to save us. He is the one in whom our trust belongs, ultimately and forever.